All right, we're in Windows Phone World with Abolade.
That's right.
How are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Great. So could you say your full name so I don't mess
Abolade
it up?
Abolade Badigashi.
Excellent. Now, the last time we spoke was at Mix 11.
That's right.
And you and Ishvan came on to C9, and we kind of geeked out for a short period of time on the Mango release and the great work you guys have done.
That's right.
So today I wanted to come to your office, and this is, you know, this is your natural habitat, where you're a developer. You write a lot of code.
Yeah.
And to kind of talk to you a little bit about what you've worked on in Mango, and also kind of dig in to the newest features that you're excited about from the operating system or the system perspective.
Okay, absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about, like, what are some of the, I mean, most people know about the background processing and stuff like this. In fact, most of the questions were about that. It makes
sense.
Right. But let's dig a little deeper into that. So what's going on?
So, I mean, like, Mango is a huge release for us, you know, compressed into a pretty short time frame. So we had some, you can think of it as sort of two buckets. There's sort of gaps that we closed. So multitasking, obviously, is one of the big ones there. But we had others. So we delivered a structured storage stack. You know, we delivered sockets. You know, we delivered sensors. We delivered camera, so you can have live camera feeds inside your applications. You know, we delivered, you know, a bunch of, you know, improvements, you know, across the entire API surface area, including Silverlight and XNA. Performance improvements in Silverlight, a bunch of performance improvements in NetCF, including generational GC, which we talked about a little bit. And in general, you know, like a huge slate of improvements. And then on the experience side, we, you know, every user that you hand a Windows phone to, you know, like would have, they love the phone, but then they all have like some feature that they feel like, this is missing. How could you ship, you know, without this feature? So Mango for us is really about like answering as many of those as, you know, we possibly could. So basically when you hold a Mango phone in your hand, you don't, you can see, you know, that it's full, you know, like we went beyond just checking off checkboxes to say for each of the places where we had like an experience gap, how can we do it and close the gap in a way that's like different.
Excellent.
You know, it's interesting. And the third part of that is as we rounded out the experiences and all the end user features, we also, you know, we also went fairly deep in making sure developers could tap into those. So there are some features, you know, that we've talked about already, such as App Connect, that basically take what we think of as our Metro Map, which is a map of all of the UI that we have in the phone, you know, in which we do a lot of work on to make sure you can navigate seamlessly from point to point, and extend that so that third-party apps can start to participate in those flows. So if you're in Bing, you know, and you're searching for, you know, for a flight, for instance, we can transition you to a flight booking app. And, you know, if you're looking at movie showtimes, we can transition you into a movie, you know, booking application. So we just sort of try to rethink what you think of as an application and figure out how do we turn them inside out so they're starting to work for the user. As opposed to being sort of like, you know, you go into an app, you come out of an app, go into an app, come out of an app.
Sure.
That's kind of like the third category of work that we did. And then the fourth category of work, which in some ways spans all of these areas, was when you think about what makes the Windows Phone experience different, there are some basics, you know, like you hand the phone to somebody and they're like, wow, it's so fluid. The UI is so fluid and dynamic, you know, and then there are some unique features like hubs, you know, and the tiles and so forth. And we wanted to make sure that apps were able to shine and feel like Windows Phone UI in a much deeper way. Like, so for instance, when you go into a hub that we've built, like the data that you care about is right there, it's front and center, it refreshes naturally, it's smooth navigation. And so we built a bunch of stuff and integrated a bunch of developer features to make sure that, you know, developers could build hubs that are just as live as ours, just as fluid as ours in terms of performance, and that are just as up-to-date as ours. You know, so when you go into the app, you don't have to wait for the app to go hit the network. The data is already there because the app used a swathe of our features, you know, so background processing, sensors, you know, et cetera, to make sure the data is already there for you.
Nice.
So that's sort of like the fourth category, which you can think of as a the overarching theme mm-hmm. for the release.
Excellent. So, you know, from a developer's perspective, if, let's say I build an app that runs on the current incarnation, mm-hmm. What sort of, how are the changes you just talked about in the third bucket and the fourth bucket, how does that relate to me from a code perspective? So in other words, what do I have to do to my app to enlighten it to take advantage of these services? Is there new APIs that I call?
Yeah, there are a bunch of new, there's like over 1,000 new APIs in Mango, and there's a reason. It's because there's a lot of stuff we wanted to enable, you know, and so, we've already got the docs, you know, on MSDN, you know, and some of the guides on, okay, this is how you think about this, mm-hmm. this is how you take advantage of this feature. So the primary way that a developer plugs in is by just, you know, using the APIs that we've provided.
Sure.
And then some of the features actually are features that were there in 7. So for instance, when in the case of App Connect, it depends on our navigation model and the way that applications are structured in pages. Mm. And all we've done is we've allowed applications to publish their own internal navigation structure in a way that the phone can consume. Okay. And so it's not necessarily a big code change that they have to do. It's just that they make some changes, you know, like we update the manifest and now the application can participate in flows that are core to the phone UX.
Excellent. So, you know, sort of the underlying kernel of my question, mm-hmm. if you will, is I was having a conversation with, the very prolific Clint Rutkus on my team, who's written a lot of phone apps and does the coding for fun stuff.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, in some sense, what he could get for free.
Yeah.
So developers love it when you build an app, and then a new incarnation or new iteration of an operating system comes in. All of a sudden, hey, it runs faster.
That's right. That's right. Right?
Or it does this, and it's cool. So
yeah, we have a lot of those.
Do you have a lot of those? Yeah. Right on. Man.
So there are things that are almost free, which I just talked about. So for instance, just updating the manifest.
Sure.
There are a bunch of performance improvements that are based that are effectively free. So list box scrolling performance is much better. Data binding performance is much better. Generational GC, you know, will just, you know, like make, you know, a bunch of scenarios, you know, just light up.
Awesome.
And work more smoothly. XNA, you know, has a number of features, you know, that they've put in, you know, around, you know, like the frame rate, you know, as well as, you know, like the content pipeline, mm-hmm. which makes things faster for games. And then we have things that are fairly small in cost. So, for example, the work that we've done to enable fast application switching. You know, so you can just press and hold on the back button and switch back to previous applications and have them come back instantly. All the developer really has to do for that is republish the same application for Mango.
Okay.
Make sure that it works. And the platform takes care of everything else. Because the application model that we had in 7 was already designed, you know, to require applications to understand pausing and resuming themselves. Mm-hmm. All we've had to do is, instead of terminating the process, which is what we did in 7, we keep the process around in Mango. And so when you come back, it's almost instant.
So let's drill into that for a second.
Sure.
I mean, what sort of changes would I have to make if I've already compensated for tombstoning, as it were, today?
The majority of applications, we think, don't have to make any changes at all.
Right.
We do want developers to make sure that their apps work, and they're the best ones to do that.
Sure.
And so that's why we have a republish step. So you just republish your application, say, okay, this is a 7.1 app now, and it's a Mango app, and therefore it understands, you know, pause and resume, and it understands the fast app switching feature, and you're done.
Excellent. So when we had our conversation at Mix, and I'd recommend people go back and watch that because mm-hmm. it was a lot of fun with the real questions coming in from the audience, the theme we couldn't get off of background processing or multitasking or whatever you're calling it. I always just call it background processing.
Sure.
The fact is you can have things that are operating on your behalf without being in front of the user,
mm-hmm.
but of course with the user in mind, as you guys talk about. I wanted to address a little bit more about, in some sense, what that means
mm-hmm.
And how developers can take advantage of that. Because I think there was some confusion that it meant that, hey, this means I can do a ton of stuff concurrently.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't see why you couldn't do that today. Like, you can use threads.
That's right.
On a phone.
That's right. So, I mean, so we sort of distinguish between multi-threading.
Yes.
I mean, you can have lots of threads in your application today. Uh-huh. You know, and then multitasking or background processing, which really means... For us, so there's a traditional definition of multiprocessing, which means literally there are multiple processes running.
Mm-hmm.
And there are multiple processes running in 7. Because of our mantra, you know, about making sure that the experience is great, in that in particular, the thing that the user is doing right now, you know, always works consistently, and things in the background don't interfere with what the user is trying to do. In 7, we made the decision, you know, to simply lock things down and only allow, you know, like the foreground application process to get full access to the phone's resources. And so while we were multi-processing, we from a user's perspective, there's only one experience that's continuing. In Mango, the bar that we set is we wanted to enable multiple experiences to continue from a user's perspective. With fast app switching, we enable the user to get back to an experience quickly. But that doesn't enable the experience to continue because it's frozen in the background. So for us, multitasking is really about having multiple user experiences continuing. In the marquee example of this is just playing music in the background.
Mm.
Because you have a real connection. You know, you can tell that the experience is continuing because you can hear the music. Right, and so for us that was sort of like a minimum bar. Like that's an example of what we wanted to be able to enable, and we wanted to do it in a way that ensured both of the experiences had sort of the feel of consistency and predictability that we delivered for 7.
Mm-hmm.
So the foreground application, if you're in an application that's really UI rich, you know, let's say a news reader application pulling images from all over, and that needs a fairly tight coupling, you know, to the GPU so that it can do its image rendering and like the panning and, you know, scrolling is really smooth,
mm-hmm.
making sure that it has all the resources it needs to do that. At the same time that we're making sure that your music playback app in the background, which is pulling content off of the network and decoding it and playing it up, you know, through the speakers,
mm-hmm.
Also has all the resources that it needs to work without glitches.
Okay.
So that was the bar that we set, you know, and to deliver on that bar, you know, we effectively, you know, had to do a bunch of plumbing work in the operating system, you know, to be able to partition the resources of the phone so that, you know, we could get something like the level of predictability that you have with a consumer electronics device, which is what the phone is today.
So let's jump into the rabbit hole.
Sure.
And talk a little bit about let's dig into what you just said.
Yeah.
So now, you know, it might be fun to,
sure.
to kind of draw the picture of the operating system and then kind of break it up into components in the Mango time frame and geek out.
You bet. So at the lowest level, you know, we have the kernel. And what you can think of as our app manager, which is responsible for all of the UI that you see on the phone. So any application, you know, that gets launched. So if you're in Start, for instance, and you launch an application, that launch request goes through our app manager. It talks to the kernel. You know, to kick off a process, you know, it gets registered with the app manager, and then it's allowed to put UI on the screen. So now we've got, you know, a process in the kernel, which we've flagged as the foreground process. And as a result of being the foreground process, it gets access to the GPU.
Ah.
It's allowed to actually paint onto the screen.
Okay.
So that's an important detail.
Yes.
Because we need to know which application is in the foreground, because we're going to treat the foreground application differently when it comes when that application asks for resources like memory,
mm.
or when its threads try to run, we schedule them preferentially to make sure that they get a really good experience.
Right? Certainly.
So that's the first. So that's what we did in 7. So now what we wanted to add in Mango is, in the case of audio, for instance, We wanted to allow you to launch, you know, an audio experience, you know, which corresponds to another process and balance the usage of resources across these two on an ongoing basis to make sure that both of them continue working well. Mm. And so that covers a bunch of resources. So it covers our scheduler for balancing the usage of CPU. It covers a memory manager for balancing access to memory. And it covers our GPU. We have a compositor whose job you can think of as it controls a screen. Our screen is a single DirectX surface, and all of the UI in the phone gets composited onto that surface. Every page the compositor knows about, and every control that you see on the screen the compositor knows about, and it maintains a Z order among these that determines the ordering in which it will blip pixels onto the screen to compose a snapshot of what you see. Yeah. And it does this 60 frames per second.
Nice.
On an ongoing basis. So effectively what you're doing when you look at the phone, mm-hmm. you're watching a movie that's being rendered continuously by the compositor based on submissions from multiple applications on a continuous basis. So this is sort of roughly the stack we have. And we also have other resources down here, like sensors, camera, network, you know, and so forth, which we also have policies around. So, for instance, if the foreground wants to use a sensor, mm-hmm. we have to give it access to that sensor. You know, and if you have something in the background that's trying to use it, it needs to give it up promptly. You know, so the user isn't stuck looking at a blank screen or wondering why the application isn't working.
Yes.
So this is sort of like the landscape that we're dealing with. We wanted to enable, at a minimum, you know, audio to work well in this scenario. We also wanted to enable a bunch of other scenarios. So if you think about a scenario such as, you know, social location, where you have, you know, an application that'll check you in automatically, you know, as you move around. You know, okay, Avalade is at a cafe right now, checks you in at Foursquare or some other, you know, social networking site. So now that application needs to run periodically. When it runs, it needs access to storage. You know, it needs access to the network. Mm-hmm. It needs access to the GPS, you know, so it can get location. You know, and it needs to be able to run at least for long enough to get a GPS fix, talk to its web service, you know, and get, you know, maybe potentially hit its isolated storage, and mm-hmm. then it's done.
Okay.
Similarly, you know, for an application, you know, like a run tracker, let's say. So now this is a tricky case because, you know, when you think about what a run tracker does, you know, you start running and it needs to talk to GPS fairly, you know, frequently depending on how fine-grained it's tracking your run.
Yeah.
You know, and just like with audio, you'd be kind of upset, you know, like if the audio glitches, mm-hmm. you know, just because you happen to be, you know, running an application, you know, like maybe looking at photos and swiping through. If you're running and you leave on a 5-mile run and the run tracker application can't get the resources that it needs and it ends up not recording your fantastic time, you'll probably be upset. It's not what you expect from a consumer electronics, you know, device.
Agreed.
Right. And so we sort of want to understand enough what are the resources that these various workloads need, mm-hmm. and map them to the resources that we have on the phone, because the phone is a fixed capacity device. All right, so we're trying to take all of these and fit them in here and keep them working well at any given time. All right, so our first step, you know, was really just to introduce the notion of both foreground and background to our app manager so that we can launch processes then that can run in the background and that don't need to display UI but do get access to resources. So that's what we refer to as an agent. And the term agent just reflects the fact that it's doing work on the user's behalf. You know, so it's delivering an experience that the user wants, mm-hmm. But it's just not, you know, visible.
Understood.
It's not sort of like front and center. So this gives us a way to partition off a set of resources, you know, to something that is not the foreground, right, which is one of the first building blocks that we need in order to enable background experiences. So one of the second building blocks that we need is we actually need to be able to name and manage the resources that the various experiences are using. And so we introduce sort of two constructs, you know, to make that possible. The first construct is the concept of a workload. And the way to think about the what we mean when we talk about a workload is, so if you're building, you know, a stereo system, let's say, you know, like learning from electronics engineers, you know, they'll say, okay, I have an input, you know, for HDMI, you know, I have an input, let's say, for CD or super audio CD output, you know, and I have to be able to drive, you know, a 1080p display, you know, as well as potentially having like picture-in-picture, you know, 720p at the same time, you know, and make sure that I have the set of DSP chips that I need on the circuit board so that if you are watching 1080p and you have 720p picture-in-picture, neither of these glitches, just because you started also routing CD audio through the system to your Bluetooth headset. And so a lot of what, you know, electronics engineer does is understanding, when you look at the brochure that is next to the equipment in the store, that the promises that that brochure made can be satisfied by the device that they've manufactured. And the way that they do that is they understand what capacity they need in order to deliver on those workloads, you know, and then they just bake it into the circuit board and they ship. And because of that simple-minded approach, that piece of equipment can basically work forever. And it can work predictably and consistently forever. And that's why, so consumers have that expectation, right? They don't yet have that expectation necessarily of PCs, you know, and, you know, things that we think of as software. And one of the things that we tried to do is to actually step up to deliver something at that bar.
Great.
You know, in Mango. So the first concept is the concept of the workload. What are the promises that we're making? We're making the promise that the foreground will continue, that, you know, it'll be smooth. We're making the promise that audio will continue and it won't glitch, you know, at least up to a certain level of codec. We're making the promise that location check-ins will continue working, potentially while you're doing both of these.
Nice.
Right? You'll still be able to check in locations. You're listening to, you know, your speakers, you know, going for a walk, you know, say. This one is a tough one because of the need to continually access locations. So you might have to give up one of these to do this, but at least we want to be able to tell in advance when you're going out for your run and you try to start the run tracker application if we've made too many promises, if we're oversubscribed.
Okay.
Right? And so what we effectively want is we want to add to our notion of a workload, add machine control. And what that just means is that when the user goes to start an experience, we look at the resources that experience is going to need, and we say, can we afford this? If we can't afford this, then at least, you know, we can communicate that back to the application and say, okay, you know, like, you know, something needs to give, right? You know, so that's not a problem that you have with a stereo device because it's fixed function. It's something we have to think about for software because, you know, the universe of applications is always growing.
Sure.
We just need to put the structure in place so that they can size their apps so they work well. So we have them. So we have these two notions: workloads, you know, admission control, and coming back to the picture, the way that these manifest themselves is that we have sets of resources, which you can think of as reservation sets, which represent the blocks that we've carved off out of the phone's resources. You need to give to experiences that are currently up and running and that the user is interacting with.
Yeah.
So the things that we can put in those reservation sets are CPU. So we can give it a process, a percentage of the CPU, for instance. You know, and in the case of a foreground, we've sized the UX, you know, and understood, you know, how things like hubs behave, how things like list box scrolling with the data binding behave, to be able to say, okay, we need this much percentage of the CPU to build, to have one of these continue working fluidly, both CPU and GPU.
Interesting.
So that gives us one size of reservation set. Similarly, for audio, that's a different workload. We talked about some of the things that are in those access to the network. access to the audio playback pipeline, and the potentially access to storage. You put those together, that's another set of resources that you can think of as. And when we start audio, we've basically carved those off and given it to the audio that's playing.
Okay.
So those are gone. And then social location is yet another size. So what we actually do in Mango is that we have names for these. So for instance, we have a foreground reservation set, which is the size of a foreground application in terms of phone resources. We have an audio reservation set, a background audio reservation set. We have a periodic reservation set, which is the size of something like social location that runs periodically and hits the network, maybe storage, maybe GPS.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a fourth, which is sort of, you can think of as a fallback for a bunch of different scenarios, which we refer to as sort of on AC.
When you're plugged in.
Reservation, when you're plugged in,
sure.
Exactly. So and the thing that's unique about when you're plugged in is that, because you can run at a higher power level, potentially a higher CPU clock rate for a continuous period, we don't have to worry as much about battery. So if you need to do something, we can let you run for longer. In general, we're not as concerned about keeping Wi-Fi up, for long periods of time. So there are certain things that just change when you're plugged in, you're on AC, and the user isn't using the phone. We're sort of sitting fat and happy from a resource usage point of view. And so that allows us to unlock a bunch of other scenarios. And so when you put all of these together, we end up with a bunch of buckets, which we refer to as bounding boxes. So these are bounding boxes which we can use to compose experiences. And the overall model that we have is we have a size for the phone. So I'll just erase a picture of the phone. Which is the set of resources that we have available. And then we have various bounding boxes. So let's say foreground. Let's say audio. Which carve off sets of those resources to have a periodic. And with this model, sort of continuing with the analogy of a consumer electronics device, like a receiver, or like a smart TV, we can see when we've run out. So these are like our DSP chips that we're just putting on a printed circuit board. We can see, by putting this in place, we can basically see consistently, how much resources have we given away, and make sure and police these bounding boxes to make sure that each of these workloads, each of which might have been built by a different developer, developers who have never talked to one another, keeps working well. Right? So that's the first side. And then making sure that we also give developers the tools that they need to test their applications and make sure that the applications that they've built can actually work well, not just on the phone that they've tested, but potentially on any comparable phone across our ecosystem.
Sure.
So for us, this was we spent a bunch of time. This is a fairly significant piece of plumbing that
Absolutely.
We put into the system in Mango to unlock a bunch of scenarios. So background processing scenarios, some of the hub integration scenarios I talked about. App Connect falls into this category as well because we're transitioning from one foreground into another foreground, and so on and so forth.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So is there any sort of way for agents to communicate with one another?
So we enabled two things. In our sandbox model, applications built by different publishers, so two different applications with different app IDs aren't allowed to communicate directly on the phone. So they can communicate indirectly, for instance, through a web service. So the key scenario that we do enable is if you have an application that's in the foreground, that's, let's say, an audio application, and it's playing audio, and it wants to be able to continue playing audio in the background, the APIs that we provide allow the foreground part of that application, which is in process A, to communicate with the background part of that application, which is in process B.
Okay.
Because those two processes actually correspond to the same application. It's just that one of them is foreground and one of them is an agent.
Okay.
So that's enabled through multiple ways. They can use, you know, isolated storage. You know, they can use the they can use the Zune API itself. You know, with like a little bit of state. You know, depending on the their needs. So if they just want, if the foreground just wants to be able to see what the latest track is, for instance, it can just get that, you know, from the Zune playback service, which they're both talking to.
Mm. Excellent. Mm. Very nice work, man.
Sure.
I mean, it's substantial changes.
Oh yeah.
From what we had, it should make for really compelling application development. For example, when people run,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure you run.
Yeah.
You like to listen to music.
Yeah.
At the same time as mapping it, so you can show off to your friends
yeah,
or whatever
right.
it happens to be, or test yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But there also could be that at certain points of the run you always do,
mm-hmm.
you want a certain song to play.
That's right.
And perhaps if you beat a certain time, you want a different song to play.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of really interesting
exactly.
things you can do with this stuff.
And the goal is just to put the infrastructure in place, like do some plumbing to make sure that these things, developers should just go nuts and have the stuff they've built, you know, work predictably. Because
mm-hmm.
that's really the problem. Like, multi-processing is not hard if you haven't made any promises.
Sure.
You know, you can just spin up processes, you know. Until
rock and roll. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but then, like, who knows what the experience is going to be.
Sure.
You know, what you'd expect. Pretty poor.
So one of the things that's not in this picture, but obviously it's very, very important, it's implicit, is the GC
mm-hmm.
that you guys, I mean, it's generational, it's two generations, mm-hmm. Gen 0, Gen 1.
That's right.
It's not, you don't have a Gen 2 like on the desktop.
Yeah.
You also don't have background processing.
Mm-hmm.
So the nice thing about concurrent GC is that often you'll experience little to no visible effect of a collection if it's doing collections on a different thread and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You didn't implement that in this release
mm-hmm.
for probably really good technical reasons. But nevertheless, I've seen demos where there's a significant difference in performance, particularly for games.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Which is a great thing. I have to say, I'm stoked about the work you guys did in the GC, because the one that we shipped in 7 was
mm-hmm.
from the old days.
That's right. And this is new.
This is awesome.
Yeah. And the benefits actually propagate across a bunch of areas. Like the fact that we have a general GC, for instance, means that when we think about sizing these workloads, these are actual sizes. You know, it's like we count the megabytes, you know, we count the CPU cycle units there. Because we have a general GC, generational GC, and you know, we're able to like keep garbage from building up more efficiently, like these are allowed to be smaller, which means we can have more of them, right? You know, on any given phone. And so that's one of those, like, when you put the various foundational things together, you know, you start getting, you know, goodness, you know, like they reinforce one another.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so the final question I'd ask is, I mean, obviously you have, for example, the resource manager, things running in the kernel, the scheduler,
mm-hmm.
things that manage all of this stuff
mm-hmm.
Automatically.
Yeah.
What's the policy for too much going on?
Mm-hmm.
So in Windows, for example, that could mean hangs, that could mean... In the worst case scenario, if too much is going on in the kernel that's uncontrollable, you just get a blue screen by policy.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
So our goal is to prevent, you know, collapse.
Okay.
So if you think about like in a consumer electronics device, like by definition, mm-hmm. if there's too much to do and the system doesn't prevent itself, you know, from taking on too much,
mm-hmm.
what we refer to the condition that results is system failure.
Mm-hmm.
And so our goal is to avoid system failure.
Sure.
And the tool that we have for that is, first of all, admission control, but then also prioritization. And the level of prioritization isn't sort of at a low level with the resources themselves,
mm-hmm.
where we are sort of blind as to, okay, who is exactly is asking for this memory locate allocation, and should we grant it or deny it? But at the level of the workload and the experience. So the time to decide when you're oversubscribed, you know, is not like, you know, when you are in, like, you know, level 17 of the game, you know, and like, and it's a critical moment. But at the point where, you know, you knew that this particular application to which we promised 90 megabytes, you know, and this much CPU, we can't satisfy that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. to give the application a predictable environment. So the way that we avoid that is mm-hmm. that we always try to make sure that we launch applications into a predictable environment. Whether we're launching an agent, it's going to play audio, mm-hmm. whether we're launching a social location. In the case of an audio agent, for instance, if there's so much going on in the background that this audio agent isn't going to be able to get the resources that it needs to play back your music, the time for the failure to occur is not 3 minutes into the song. Mm-hmm. The time is when you hit play.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And so that's what we built.
Nice. I mean, that's interesting. Now, the thing is, though, as you said, let's use the example of you have audio running. Mm-hmm. I have another app that I downloaded from Marketplace.
Yeah.
That is an app that goes out and makes a web service call, brings in a bunch of data,
mm-hmm.
And stores it in my own personal RSS reader,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's a network call, it's a IO write,
yeah.
Memory. What happens if I'm listening to music and it's downloading a gigantic blog post?
Yeah.
You had no way of knowing. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was a blog, but that's not a great example, but here's my point I'm trying to yeah. make.
And network resources.
Network resources plus memory.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely network resources, because okay. let's say that I've downloaded a huge amount of stuff in one of these agents.
Yeah.
You didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Because there was no way for the application developer to tell you, when I make a call to this specific thing, I'm going to blast down a bunch of data.
That's right. But remember, though, that we have multiple network requests that are going out. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of things that we can do. So I can tell what we've done in Mango, is that we have a very rudimentary prioritization scheme where if you have a background transfer that you've kicked off, we're streaming audio, we actually have the ability to pause that background transfer and have it back off so that the audio doesn't glitch.
Mm.
In the case of more general purpose case where you're streaming audio and you have, let's say, a social location application or a periodic application whose transfer happens to be large, part of what TCP does is to balance those two. And so you'll get some rudimentary level of balance in TCP itself.
Okay.
We have some ideas, and we sort of think we know how to improve on that even further.
Cool.
Playing, with receive window sizes. That's not something that we've done, for Mango. But depending on what we learn, as we start to get the feedback coming in and looking at SQIM data,
mm-hmm.
We might go deeper in that area.
Excellent. Well, you guys have gone way deep. It's very impressive. And I look forward to getting this on my device.
You bet.
Playing around with it. So, hey, thank you for taking your time to
absolutely.
To talk to us and really show us what you've done. It's been a lot of great work.
Yeah, thanks.
So we'll come back and see you.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Cheers.
Bye.